5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room episode 175, and it is the 6th of February 20. I never thought I'd live to see 2020. I remember when I was, we slipped the thing back in primary school, working out how old I'd be in the year 2000, thinking, wow, you know, if I live to that age, you know, wow, you know, do people live that? And now it's like a distant memory. It's just really kind of depressing, I suppose, but there you have it. So it is 9:30 Central Time, and, you know, if you're tuning in, obviously anybody who's not tuning in can't hear me, so, you know, there's that. You know, we used to talk a lot, but we've not so much. I think she's gone off me, to be honest with you. But so this is our only opportunity to have a bit of an old chin wag. So I'm gonna bring her on. the yee-haw. How are you this evening? It's been cold. I know you've got a lot of rain at the moment, but it's bloody cold. We just checked, it's like 39 here, which, you know, this is Texas, you know, it's like, that is bloody cold here. And yeah, it's funny, I actually got a weather alert thing earlier saying it's going up to 71 tomorrow, so, you know, warmer times tomorrow. Warmer times.
Yeah, you know, just the opposite here. We were close to, I think, 60 or in the 60s earlier today, but it's been raining and now it's kind of flooding. You know, the school's canceled tomorrow and our high is going to be like 36. So, yay!
Woo!
I know.
It's 36, yeah, wow.
You know, when I got up to, you know, tinkle in the middle of the night, I could hear the rain all the time. It's made me so blasted tired. I when we were talking, you know, right before the show, I was yawning, and I'm glad we're doing the show. Otherwise, I'd probably be napping right now because, with the rain, it's hard to I just want to curl up in bed and pull my blanket up and take a little nap.
Mm-hmm. I've not had time for a nap today. I had to take a 2 fistfuls of B12 just to keep going today. It was
We were gone all day in the, you know, they're canceling school, so they're telling, you know, people stay off the road, and we were gone most of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I know. We're adventurous, so, you know, we just had our, you know, paddles with us and so.
Oh, I'm hearing myself now. I'm hearing an echo now. It's just not good.
I don't
hear me. I'm sure nobody
would.
It's gone now. It's gone. Maybe it's my headphones. I don't know. But anyway, I'm gonna play this.
Into a week in the morning and I step outside and I take a distance and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs.
So, Xtina, and I know what's coming. What is going on?
Some stuff and things and some very, very good things. Yeah.
And the very, very good bigly thing that happened on Friday was our second launch of the year, which is the Anthology of Bizarro. Which I have to say is one of my favorite anthologies. I love Bizarro. I'm a big fan of Bizarro. And there's some. I mean, you edited, so you know there's phenomenal tales in there. So
yeah.
Buy the book, people.
Definitely, and I love that cover. But I do have to say, I'm in awe of Bizarro writers. I think it's so. You know, anything goes. I think that's the cool part about Bizarro. Anything goes. And they don't even try to, you know, make an, you know, you just walk into the street and there's a talking dog. And there's no excuse for this talking dog.
Mm-hmm.
It just, that's the way things are. And you keep going. And I think it's amazing. And I do. I read some of the stories and I'm like, this is bizarre.
You know, it is. Well, that's the whole point. I mean, because you can be as extreme as you want. You can cover. I mean, you've read some of my Bizarro works, you know. And you can just be off the wall. Like, it's like, you know, as horror writers, you know, we stretch boundaries. We create worlds. We create things, creatures, monsters, whatever. But with Bizarro, it's just like gloves are off. Whatever you, anything, like I say, anything goes. You know, no matter how way out or grotesque or whatever, and I think we've had this conversation before. You know, a lot of sort of modern, more modern Bizarro, You know, the authors just think they can just be gross.
Yeah.
And it's just gross.
Yeah,
and it's just too
really, yeah.
You know, besides Carlton Mellick, Edward Lee, Ralph James White. I mean, you know, the classic, you know, I suppose the classics, if you like, of Bizarro, where it's a good story, very well put together.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them,
yeah.
One of my favorites, I think it might be a Carlton Mellick one, was The Haunted Vagina, which I did draw from that when I wrote Feeder. I've created a whole, with The Haunted Vagina, there's a whole world in this girl's vagina, oddly enough. But in Feeder, do you ever read Feeder? I don't know if you've read it yet.
I haven't.
It's the whole world resides within the folds of a big fat person, you know.
this guy discovers a whole
it's funny. Feeder was what it's one of the first that Hellbound published along with Colton. And Feeder, literally, it's selling. It's still every week. It's every month. It sells. People just must like it, you know. And it's because I did it it came out as a double bill in paperback with I Am Joe's Unwanted Penis, which again is it's about the story of a transsexual's penis that was removed, and it's the story from the penis's point of view. And he goes on this adventure. He goes on an adventure with other removed body parts. It's a terrific story. you know, to be reunited with his body. You know, the person who didn't want him no more. You know. So it came out as a little. It's just because it's just so off the wall, and you've got this, you know, severed penis that not only, you know, talks and he walks around and he goes on adventures, and it's like, I love it.
Yeah. I feel like I need to read both of these now. I have in paperback, so I'm going to have to get that off my shelf because, you know, I don't think I ever really knew what Feeder was about. I mean, and that sounds pretty bizarre. I definitely have to.
Well, that's the point. It's you know, rooted in facts. You know, there are feeders and whatever the opposite is, you know, where it's usually guys who will feed women until they get so grotesquely fat they can't walk. And that's their thing. They get off on that. You know, the woman gets, she likes becoming totally dependent on the guy, and he likes feet. And usually the guy's sort of really skinny, I suppose, because she's eating all the food, you know. But I've seen documentaries on it, and it is a thing. It is a thing.
Yeah,
and even online, you know, there are large women who they do the webcam thing.
Men pay vast amount of money to
watch them eat. So far, nobody's paid to watch me eat, I have to say.
Right.
I'm not sure how marketable that would be. Here's Jim eating pizza.
You need to explain to the audience. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
but there's somebody out there who probably would pay for it. So you just have to find your audience.
Well, they will, sadly, and it, you know, sometimes in my more bored moments, you know, it might just be me that does this, but I'm sure I'm probably not the only person. I think of the most odd thing that I can and type it and see if there's porno.
No, wow,
see if there's porno. Just think of something just like ants, for example. There's... Seriously, there are guys who will dip their knobs in a jar full of ants, and the ants will bite them. That's their thing.
Wow.
There's a whole thing, stinging nettle torture, just people getting whipped with stinging nettles. I mean, it's like anything you can think of, you know, you think of it, just type it in and it'll be on Pornhub somewhere. I mean, it's just like scary. Yeah, I don't get out much. I think you know.
Obviously. But imagine the stories you could create with you know, with these ideas. That would be man, I can see the you know, the novel now with the
The Erotic Odyssey of Colton. Okay, anybody listening, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. this show is not a big plug for my work, but Colton Forshay has quite a few of those elements in. Some of the bizarre mm-hmm. factors. I mean, we have the big fat woman, servicing a whole host of men in her flabby folds, and we have the cannibalism, the couple barbecuing their daughter, and the talking dog that he got pregnant. Oh, the guy who got his car pregnant as well. We got him. Yeah. We've got the game show where his wife is murdered on the game show. The scene that got it almost banned. Which actually it is actually. It's not banned on Amazon, but it's restricted.
Hidden.
Is the scene with the miniature Shetland pony. There is that scene, which is the one that got it banned.
Wow. Well, we know where Amazon has its limits, you know, and Shetland ponies. That's it right there. So
seriously, if I took that, and again, it's literally almost a one-liner.
Right.
And I think it does involve a vicar as well, so that probably doesn't help. But and I reckon if I remove that and probably the couple barbecuing their daughter. You see, ironically, if I made it, they were barbecuing just some random girl. It would be fine. Mm-hmm. They'd be fine with that because it's their daughter.
But it's not sex.
There's no sex. they're just cooking her. And she wants to be cooked as well. And I'll admit I did lift that straight from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where in the dim and distant future they genetically created a cow that wants to be killed mm-hmm. and eaten because obviously it's more humane.
You were sampling that.
What a great idea. And this girl is quite happy. It's an honour to be barbecued and served up at her parents' barbecue, and it just made it all nicer. It was consensual, and again, consensual cannibalism is a thing.
And that word, consensual,
does happen. You know, the case in Germany a few years ago, where the guy answered an advert and he went along, and the guy sliced him up, cooked him, and ate him, and because that was his thing, you know.
Cool.
So you know, like you say, no matter what you think of, you know, it's been done,
it's
and
there.
It's
there,
isn't it? Enough plugging my magnificent works. I genuinely don't know what's going on this show. I have no idea. I was a little bit late coming to the microphone tonight. So what have we got going on this evening?
Well, real quick, for our little segment about, you know, what's going on, I wanted to say that I was excited because we just I just put in an offer and it was accepted for the narration of Carlos Colón's two books.
Sangre, The Color of Dying and The Wrong Side of Tomorrow. That is brilliant.
Yes.
We have been waiting again. We've been waiting for just the right person. I know that, you know, because it's a specific tone to the book. I'm delighted. I bet Carlos is beside himself.
He did seem pretty excited, yeah. And I listened to the first 15 minutes today, and I thought it was great. And I also put in an offer for Texas Roadkill 4 on the audio. And again, I think the guy did a great job, and I'm excited. So, yay!
Fantastic. Well, I'm excited too. I'm twitching over here. I'm very maybe a little bit moistened too, you know, but that's great. That's great.
Okay, so what do we have going on tonight?
I don't know. Don't ask me. Ask me, Xtina? What do I know? I'm just a talent, you know.
We have two horror authors on our show tonight. We have the awesome Eric Nunnally and the great Michelle Renee Lane. Yay!
Am I supposed to have done something there?
Well,
we're having them together. We're having a bit of a menage a four. I guess. It's four of us.
I don't know if that's how you say it, but yeah, they actually know each other, so I thought that was cool to bring them on together. And I think probably Michelle was going to tell this part, but Eric, I think drew or made the cover for her book. I'm not sure which. We'll have to ask her when she's on.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so they, you know, it's a cool little, it's a reunion here, so that's kind of cool. So
I think without further ado, as ignorant people say, I think you should introduce them.
Okay, we have horror authors Eric Nunnally and Michelle Renee Lane. Woo!
Woo! Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Feel free to join in. Do feel free to join in. How are we this evening?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having us on.
You're welcome. In previous shows, we've had more than one person at a time. I always lose track of who's who, to be honest. So, you know, having a male and a female will help me with that, so I know who's who. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I do have to point out one thing, though, that I don't know Michelle. Like, we've never met. We've never met.
Yeah, we have. We have met.
I don't remember.
Yeah, we met at NECON.
I know.
Oh, listen to
me. Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to tell some stuff about you, you know, and I was all ears.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, the few. We've been at war for a long time.
Nice. I'm going to get my popcorn and sit back, James. You know,
I'm. If we're going to have a domestic, that's tremendous. I'm excited.
That's if you get some callers or, you know, listeners. That's great. Yeah, great for ratings.
Oh yeah, we do like a bit of drama.
So
I'm
Michelle,
not sure how much I
can
gin up. I mean, you know. I talk a good game before the fight, but there's no fight left after that.
I'll talk. I'll bark. No bite. I hear ya. So,
yeah.
Michelle, you're here to talk to us about your book, Invisible Chains, and that's coming in July. Tell us a little bit about it.
So, actually, it was released this past July, and So it's a slave narrative, but it's a supernatural slave narrative, and it follows a young female slave who is dealing with a lot of things in her life, and she ends up making friends with monsters because they're better company than the people who own her, and so she goes on some adventures and meets some very interesting people. But the point of the novel that I was trying to convey is that the horror comes from the institution of slavery itself.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But you got vampires and werewolves, I see. Like what you know that right there is, yeah, I'm kind of sold and want to read this book. So. That's awesome. What are you working on now?
That's a good question. So I don't know. I've been writing a lot more of nonfiction lately. I write for Speculative Chick, and I just did a piece about HBO's Watchmen, and great show. But I'm also, I have a short story coming out, I think in March, in the Dystopian States of America, which is an anthology.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it's an anthology.
We're sharing a POC.
That's true. the anthology is a charity effort to raise money for the ACLU.
Wow, that sounds amazing. You're so busy, and I, you know, trying to figure out when I'm going to nap. I mean, you know, so, wow.
Naps are important.
Awesome. I, you know what? I keep saying this, but, you know, the boyfriend and, you know, my boss, you know, they don't agree, you know, so there's no napping for Xena. Very sad. So you have an excerpt to read for us, don't you, Michelle, from Invisible Chains?
I do, yeah. So this excerpt is, it's from chapter 13. And mm-hmm. what's happening in this scene, so my protagonist, Jacqueline, she sort of gets in the middle of an argument between her owner, Lottie, who is also her half-sister, and Lottie's husband, James Lynch. And they're arguing about Lynch's infidelity. And the infidelity that they're talking about is the fact that Lynch has been raping Jacqueline consistently for probably at least a year. And because of the situation for both women who are involved in this argument, Lottie can't really punish her husband. So in order to get some satisfaction, she demands that that her husband take Jacqueline outside and whip her in the courtyard.
Wow.
So what I'm going to read is immediately after the whipping, and I'm just going to dive right in.
Okay, go for it.
All the strength had left my body. Pain covered every inch of me. I couldn't fight now if I had to. More than anything, I just wanted to lie down and die right there in the garden. They could bury me under the herbs for all I cared. I was about to fade from exhaustion when something jumped over the wall and attacked Lynch. Lottie screamed. With the strength I had left, I turned to see what could only be a wolf tearing its way through Lynch's throat and chest. It was the biggest animal I'd ever seen, at least as tall as a man, taller, and covered in coarse black fur. It stood on its hind legs and treated itself to a meal of that bastard's flesh. It picked Lynch up and shook him from side to side in its jaws and then dropped him to the ground. Then it came at me. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Lottie crawling across the yard to kneel beside her husband's corpse. I was so tired and scared, I couldn't even scream when the animal fell forward onto its front paws and started walking towards me on all fours. No one was coming to save me. The wolf faced me and approached the fountain, stopping short just a few feet away, watching me. It didn't come any closer. I thought for sure it would kill me. Instead, the creature bowed its head, then looked me in the eyes. I must have lost my mind because I swear that animal was smiling at me. Then it turned and leapt back over the wall. My body finally collapsed against the copper statue. I don't know how long I was out, but when I came to, Señor Velázquez was untying my hands. A wide-brimmed black hat and his little round dark spectacles kept the sun off his face, and leather gloves covered his hands. He lifted me into his arms and carried me to my room. He placed me face down on the bed and examined my wounds. Gently, he removed my tattered dress. Pain and exhaustion kept me from caring about modesty. I'd escaped death that day. What difference did it make if Señor Velázquez saw my naked body? Jacqueline, can you hear me? Yes, I whispered. My throat hurt from screaming. You lost a lot of blood. Your skin is badly torn. Will you allow me to help you? His words were clipped and tense. Yes, Señor Velázquez. My name is Carlos. Some of the anger left his tone. Carlos, yes. Am I going to die? Not if I can help it. Did you see the wolf? I did. We can talk about it after you rest. I turned my head to look at him kneeling next to the bed. I had never seen a white man so worried before. A frown twisted his beautiful mouth, and his eyes were glassy, like he'd been crying. Had he watched Lynch whipping me? Carlos removed his hat, gloves, and spectacles and set them on the table next to my bed. His cold fingers soothed away some of the pain as he examined my back. My muscles tensed beneath his touch, expecting more pain. He peeled shredded scraps of my dress from inside the wounds. I gripped the blanket and bit my lip to keep from screaming. My back was raw, sore, and sticky. "Your wounds are much worse than I thought," Carlos said. He held my hand, and I saw there was fear in his eyes. "I'm not dead yet." My vision blurred. I had to close one eye to focus. He stroked my cheek and brushed away strands of hair that had begun to stick to my face with sweat. The coolness of his hand comforted me. I wanted to drift off to sleep, or even death, but the pain wouldn't let me. "Jacqueline, I'm going to heal you. Without my help, you will die. You lost a lot of blood when James beat you. Unless you want to become like me, I must heal you before you lose more blood." "How?" He stood and took off his long black coat and rolled up his shirt sleeve, then pulled a pocket knife from his vest. He pierced the flesh in the crook of his arm, lifted my head, and placed his arm against my mouth. "Drink," he said.
Oh, ta-da. You know, I knew that was the end, but I was hoping if I didn't say anything, you'd keep going because I didn't want it to end quite yet. So, and you read it. You know what? You read it too good. You know, I think that we're going to have you on next week to read, you know, whatever excerpt we have. And that was really good.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
I have to say that, you know, I had one time when I had to read something, and it was just, I had written it, so you think I would be okay with this. And, oh, my God, I'm going so fast that nobody can understand what I'm saying. And, you know, I forget to take breaths, and it was just a mess. It was.
It takes practice. You have to practice.
But
right.
That's
what I was going to say. You got to do it a few times all by yourself and get your head in the right space.
I had, and everything was great when it was just me alone. I was killing it. And then, you know, I don't know, nervous or something, but it was a mess. It really was. So, you know, now I think that occasionally they have me read stuff just because it's, you know, good for entertainment. You know, I make people laugh. That was awesome. And what was your inspiration for the book, you know, in general, not just the whipping scene, but, you know, what was your inspiration?
Wow. Okay. So the book started as a short story, and I started writing it, oh, God, I don't know, probably more than 15 years ago. And I started writing it because I was having a lot of difficulty in my own personal life, communicating and getting people to understand me and to feel like I had a place in the world. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've been interested in vampires for a very long time, and I started reading Anne Rice when I was about 11, and just kind of, you know, never stopped reading about vampires. And it's a bit of an obsession for me. But I kept thinking that I wanted to write about vampires. And I do. I write about them in my nonfiction as well as my fiction. But, you know, I was hoping that I was going to write books like Anne Rice. And around that time, I also started reading, I think I was reading Beloved by Toni Morrison. And I was reading some other books that were written by women of color, like Jewel Gomez. She wrote the Gilda stories. And they were telling stories about the history of slavery, but from the perspective of the people who were living in it, and more specifically, women and how it affected them. And that had a huge impact on me. And I thought, maybe that's the story I want to tell, because that seems like a more important story. I mean, there are slaves in Interview with a Vampire, but they are like window dressing. There's like, they're hardly even part of the story. But yet it's taking place, you know, at the height of slavery in Louisiana. And so for them to just be, you know, decorative is kind of troubling. So I started to rethink what my story was going to be about. And so I wanted to tell a story of a young girl who is dealing with a lot of trauma. She goes through, you know, every day there is violence all around her. And she's just expected to accept whatever is coming her way. And she finds this inner strength, not only because she has this legacy of magic that's been passed down to her from her ancestors, but because she is just a strong person, and she faces a lot of terrible things and still survives and comes out a better person at the end.
Wow, there is so much going on, and it's so much more than just a vampire story. That's awesome. I love that. I want to read it now. Yeah, that's
great. Great.
You know.
Oh, be careful, no, Michelle. She's gonna ask you for a free book. Feel comfortable. Feel comfortable saying no. Feel comfortable saying no, because she will. You give her one free book, and she will expect all the time. All the
that's
time.
That's true.
So I wanna know. You know what? You guys. You know, there's obviously some history there. Eric designed the cover. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah,
why?
I designed the cover.
Why? Is that something you do, or you just did it accidentally, or something?
Well, I'm actually a graphic designer by trade. You know, I went to school for it. That's what I do as a career. You know, during the day, and a mutual acquaintance, John McElveen, the publisher of Haverhill House, that published the book, he contacted me to see if I wanted to do the cover. And he sent me the manuscript, and I read the book, and I really enjoyed it myself. And the rest, I guess, is history.
Awesome. Well, there you go. Yeah,
so
that's
we got
cool,
to do the paperback cover. We got to do the hardback, the wraparound. It was a lot of work, and I really like the way it came out. Everybody seems to be enjoying it.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
People love it.
Excellent. And when I read the book, you know, Michelle talked a little bit. I'm going to say some good things about the book right now. So the excerpt that she read, right, was like chapter 13. That's well into it. But the first third of the book is everything that she was just talking about. So there's a lot of humanity that's laid down in the beginning. It's really deftly told, the slave life from Jacqueline's perspective. And a lot of that, as is hinted at in the excerpt that she read, is violence, sexual and physical. But it could have wandered into more splatterpunk type territory or something that's really graphic, but she handles that horror really well. And as you get into the supernatural elements in the book, it makes the supernatural stuff even more terrifying, I think, in a lot of ways, but not nearly as terrifying, in my opinion, as these things that actually happen. So, you know, it's really well done.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Now,
that's what struck me the most about it when I read it. I'm like, oh, my God, this is, you know, really set it up really well, and then she goes on this journey.
About that signed book, it can be made out to X Tina. That's X Tina. Now, you know, vampires, we're talking about, you know, vampires was you're obsessed with. Do you have aside from Anne Rice, what is your favorite either movie or TV or book vampire?
Oh my goodness, so many. I go through phases. So when I was my first introduction to vampires was Bela Lugosi's Dracula. And I feel like Dracula is always going to be one of my favorite vampires. And I feel like it's mainly because there are so many different versions of Dracula. Dracula changes with the times a lot. And he meets a lot of different people's needs, and people are able to take the character and run with it. I recently watched the BBC adaptation on Netflix, and it's great. And what struck me is that particular Dracula reminded me of more of like a 1960s Dracula or a 1950s Dracula. He was, I mean, not like Christopher Lee, but in that same vein. And so when he like, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but like everyone loves it up to the point where you're in the third episode, and it's in like the modern era, and I don't feel like it makes a lot of sense, and I feel a lot of other people feel that way too.
I'm looking forward to seeing
it. It was weird and distracting, but he is a very cool. Yeah. He's a very cool Dracula. He's a sexy Dracula. I don't know. I read a lot of paranormal romance, and so I'm a huge fan of the Bon Temps vampires in the Sookie Stackhouse books. They're great. Let me think about it. I'm actually standing up and going around my bookshelf because I'm tired too.
Are you Team Bill or Team Eric?
Oh, I'm absolutely Team Eric.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So I don't know. Jeanine Frost has this great world that she's created of vampires. They're very interesting. They're a little different from some of the vampires I've encountered. And she has like a 4-book series about her version of Dracula. And he is like one of the most sexy. He is like the sexiest Dracula ever. He is super cool. So, yeah, I could talk about vampires all night. So if you don't stop me, I will continue to do it. I won't stop talking about them.
I loved vampires too. When I was a teen, I actually tattooed vampire bites on my neck. So.
Oh wow! Okay.
Do you or do you not regret that decision, Alex Dina?
Well, I don't have them still, so we'll say that.
Well, I must admit, I mean, it's very polarizing. I do like a vampire, but I'm a werewolf fan, I have to say. You know,
I love them too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I love werewolves too. Yeah, Eric writes about werewolves, and there are vampires in some of his books too.
Oh yeah,
Excellent. Excellent.
Oh, I'm looking right now. I'm looking ahead. Yeah, the book he's going to talk about is about a werewolf. Okay, so
yay,
I'm excited.
Yay, werewolves. I'm excited. I like werewolves.
We need to take a quick little break, and James probably has to take a wee. And either one of you go anywhere. We'll be right back, okay? So don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, we will be right back after this.
The Panic Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction, You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Show. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Steena, just how drunk are you this evening?
What?
not drunk enough, I think, is the answer.
Let me pour some more. I'll let you know.
You do that. I've even got a little effect for that. I haven't played it for ages. I'll just decide. Talk amongst yourselves for a minute. Here we go. One of my favourites.
Oh, yeah, you know, see my introduction. Yeah.
That used to be, but then we got an even better one. So
we
need to blend both of them. So, Eric, I think you mentioned werewolves and whatnot, so I'm you've got my full attention, sir. Tell us a bit more about Blood for the Sun.
All right. Well, Blood for the Sun is about a werewolf who's almost 200 years old, who's got a kind of supernatural Alzheimer's, and in order to keep that at bay, he searches for missing children. So the same
wow.
type of thing where you have to keep your mind active in order to stay sane.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, got ya. I'm joking.
And I didn't like vampires, and it wasn't so much that I didn't like vampires as that I thought that werewolves had been mistreated for far too long.
Yeah.
And I wanted I just had a deep interest in crime and horror and thrillers, and I wanted to do that kind of flawed detective story.
I like that. You know, I've said it on the show often enough. You know, from a publisher point of view, I love. You know, we get vampires, we get werewolves, as long as it's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wanted to write a werewolf story for a long, long time, and it was only for about 3 years ago now that I actually came along with a different slant on it. Rather than just say it's churning the same stuff out,
right.
I love the premise.
It is.
I mean, it's the beast that rages within all of us, and I've always been. Probably because I'm a zoologist as well, so I'm going to gravitate more towards the animalistic than the whatever the vampires are supposed to be. I suppose that you're bats, bloody blah. Bats are not scary, to be honest. Big fuck off wolves, they're scary. Little bats that weigh like 3 ounces, to be fair, not scary.
Well,
no.
You got a good-sized bat zooming around in your bedroom in the middle of the night. It's a little disturbing.
I agree.
Well, to be fair, I would rather have a good-sized bat buzzing around my bedroom at night than having a wolf buzzing around my bedroom at night. To be honest, call me old-fashioned, if you will. But werewolf or lycanthrophiles get together. What for you? What is the definitive werewolf movie? loaded question.
It is a loaded question. I think a lot of people would say, oh, good Lord, I'm blanking on the name. I read the book, too. You know, it's the werewolves on the commune.
Oh, The Howling.
The Howling. Good Lord.
That is the right answer. Yes, the right. I remember seeing that at the movie. This is how old I am. When it came out in, was it 1881? Went to see it, and it was like, wow. I watched it again recently, and to be fair, some of the poor practical effects, obviously, some of the effects are a little bit, ropey now, but
yeah.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. Great story, terrific premise. Just everything. I remember the book, Gary Bradner book. I read that as well, devoured that. The second book was good. The second movie was a bit rough. The movie's got shit after that, to be honest. But the first one...
It goes pretty well off the road.
Yeah, there's talk of them remaking it.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, I read a thing only a few days ago about them remaking. Again, maybe it's one of these that they're just talking about, because there's also talk about remaking Jaws, for God's sake. But I don't know. I would like, the thing is that they say they're going to remake it, and then they reimagine it, which means spoil it.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it alone. What they should do is, instead of remaking the Howling, which is, for me, one of the perfect films. It's up there with, The Godfather and with Jaws and with Alien and The Thing as the perfect film. what we should do, we should send them Blood for the Sun and say, look, never mind redoing The Howling, film this. You've got werewolves, you've got the werewolves, fine. But it's different. It's got that. It's a little bit werewolf. It's a little bit The Shining. It's a little bit, you know. But it's different.
Oh, yeah.
It's that uniqueness that, you know, certainly cinema is reflecting cinema. There's nothing. It's difficult these days to find something that's not from the DC universe or that doesn't have Finn Wolfhard in it. I mean, he's a great kid and everything, but does he have to be in everything, literally? I mean, it's funny, I have a young daughter, we watch a lot of, you know, Pixar, a lot of the animated movies, and I always watch the end credits to see which part Finn was, you know, because he's in every fucking movie, you know. instead of churning out the same old, just formulate crap, you know, let's have some new stuff, but they just won't take a chance. We've got Amazon, you've got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got Apple now jumping on the back, all these platforms that want original material. I'm hoping, you know, this is gonna, you know, the independent movie makers are the people who are, they do take the risk and they are churning out some. I mean, look at Bird Box, for example, you know, they're churning out some really, really good, different. And you can tell, you always know if it's a bit different, you know, it's an independent production company, it has to be, because, you know, your big studios are just churning out, too busy churning out, you know, Superman versus Spider Man and Batman versus Wonder Woman and.
Yeah, they do.
What?
Those are the
right. And
Transformers. Every year, they're consistently the highest-grossing movies.
But to be fair, I'm sure, you know, for a couple of hours of mindless stuff going on, fine. It is literally mindless. It's prepubescent boys who've not discovered Pornhub yet. You know, this is they go and they see this and it's just we want the original stuff. You know, we want. In fact, I'm looking forward to seeing Jojo Rabbit. Looks phenomenal. One, I'm a big Scarlett Johansson fan, and two, it looks great. I saw the last Steve Carell movie, Marin.
Is that the town where he builds the town? He's traumatized.
Yes.
And
if you haven't seen it. I'm a big Steve Carell fan, to be honest, but if you haven't seen it, see, his performance in that movie is phenomenal. And it's a great, it will make you laugh, it will make you cry, it'll tug you, and it's a true story as well, as it happens, but again, it was different, they dared to be different, and it was a great movie, and it probably made, like, you know, $6 at the box office, but that's the sort of stuff. Maybe I'm getting old, you know, and watching robotic transforming things, fighting other robotic transforming for the ninth time.
It's tough to find things that aren't you got to get off the beaten path to find some interesting things. Mm-hmm. So like when The Howling was in theaters, like that's when I saw it, and that's what it, you know, that was sort of a definitive werewolf movie for me, for the way they looked and the way they acted. But since then, I've really enjoyed both Dog Soldiers and Howl.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Howl?
Howl. Is that the one on the train?
It
was like soldiers on the train, wasn't it? That was great. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're both isolated movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember. Well, so to say, when The Howling came out, about the same time, there was American Werewolf in London and Company of Wolves. And Company of Wolves, I thought it was pretentious, artistic claptrap, personally speaking. Angela Lansbury was in it, God bless her. American Werewolf in London, again, great film. I mean, again, it was very polarized. You know, I was still in high school at the time. And it was one or the other, you know what I mean? I mean, I enjoyed American Werewolf in London, but for me, The Howling was your werewolf movie. You know, that's the one by which I've measured all werewolf movies since. But again, American Werewolf in London, I saw that again recently. It was great, you know. It was a good
movie.
It
takes a long time to get to the point.
Oh, it just goes on and on and on and on. It's terrible. Bored me stupid. Really do.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, what you were saying earlier, Eric, about how, you know, werewolves are, they're kind of underrated. And, it, you know, I mean, you have a ton of stuff out there with vampires and, you know, then the nowadays everything is a zombie, you know. And, yeah, werewolves, I think, have, I don't even know a whole lot about, you know, maybe the lore or, you know, too much about a werewolf. So I definitely think we need more werewolf things. And, why are werewolves so?
It's just as old as vampirism. It's like every culture has some kind of creature that's seeking to drink your blood, and every culture has people that transform either fully into an animal or halfway into an animal and hunt. I think it's a common fear, you know. I mean, when we were not able to defend ourselves as readily, we weren't as built up as we are now, it's probably something you had to worry about, getting bit by something or eaten by something. I don't know. Seems to be just built into our DNA, but every culture seems to have something of one of those two monsters. And I really like that fact, because then you can really play with it. I don't think it's too smart to get too caught up in the existing lore. You can do whatever you want because these things don't exist. You know, I completely reinvent what these are supposed to be in my book, and that's part of what made it fun for me to write.
Yeah, like I was going to say that with any werewolf at all story that I've ever come in contact with, they don't remember when they're in the animal form, like when they're humans, they don't know what their animal. And is that the same for your character as well?
Yeah, no, he's entirely in control. It's an aspect that he accesses, and he can sense that there's a sort of a point of no return. In taking on the form, but it's not something where he doesn't know. He doesn't wake up in the next morning like, who have I killed? What have I done? I really like the Werewolf by Night comics, but for a long time it suffered from what I didn't like about werewolf stories, which is exactly what you said. It turns into a monster, a raging monster that, you know, has no real memory or direction. But much later in the series, when they rebooted the series, Jack, through a number of techniques, discovers more and more about this beast that he's carrying, and he actually sort of becomes one with it. And to me, that was much more interesting, because then you've got someone, you're following a character who's actually got some narrative prowess.
Right. I want to hear more from Blood for the Sun. So do you have an excerpt for us to read?
I do. I do have an excerpt.
Yay. It's my favorite part of the show because I could sit back and drink while the guests.
I love story time. It's great.
I know.
Yeah. All right, let me know when we're ready.
Okay, if you have to set it up or anything, go right ahead, or if not, just start reading.
All right, so this is from Blood for the Sun. This is going to be reissued by Haverhill House Press in March of this year. I don't think we have entirely nailed that down yet, but I believe it's March, and then the sequel will be this summer. So this is towards the beginning of the book, where Alexander is, quote unquote, helping with a very bizarre case. So it's a murder scene, but again, it's very early in the book.
Okay.
A skinny blonde boy stood naked in the dead girl's thin, congealing blood pool. No one else could see him, of course. Still 7 years old, he always reminded me of the awful things I'd seen and done. He wouldn't let me forget my ghost, my incorporeal, innocent soul. Guilt clogged the back of my throat, as it always did, and I mumbled an apology to the child in my native tongue, using my real name, pledging my soul, if I still had one, and whatever else I had to give. There was no response from the boy. He remained the ghostly embodiment of the one memory I could not seem to lose. Appropriate, I thought, since I was the one who ended his life. I surveyed the landing, appreciating my unnaturally clear eyes. It was the first significant change I noticed when I became what I am today. Any fool could tell this was a murder. The girl's throat was missing, and that doesn't happen during anyone's ordinary day. Her head, attached to her body by a hand's width of flesh and bone, a visual aberration that was difficult to process. She lay chest down at the bottom of the stairs, her legs sprawled on the last few steps like a discarded thing, a rag doll that had been emptied of batting, punished by its owner simply for existing. Wading through the scents in the air around her, I tried to sort out the killer, or killers, by scent. I regarded her body more closely. She was approximately 8 years old, yellow bloodstained t-shirt, unkempt braided hair with yellow clips, blue jeans, worn and tattered sneakers, no socks. One of her dirty yellow sneakers was missing. I looked around and spotted the missing footwear in the shadows of a far corner. Socks. Two pair, always there, Nettie and Claire. My sisters, gone so very long ago. The mnemonic and its memory passed. I needed to focus on the present. She'd been round in the face, like most kids, but now her flesh had stiffened into a death grimace, her black skin going gray. A fat, pearlescent fly crawled across her drying eye. Had she fought him? I looked closely at her hands, careful not to disturb the body, nor to step in the tiny pool of blood. She had dirt under her nails, as well as some torn skin. Good girl. The forensics team would do what they could with that evidence. I stooped in closer to her hands. Her fingers were curled in intense rigor. I couldn't detect any heat radiating from her. She's been dead long enough to lose her warmth. Since most of her blood had been taken, I could only guess that she had probably died within the last 6 to 8 hours. Peppermint leaned close to Roberts and whispered, "The fuck's he doing?" Roberts whispered back, "Shut up and wait." Their voices carried clearly to my ears despite their hushed tones. There was a scent of stale sweat. Definitely not hers. His. The man who killed her. The spore had the typical flavor of a human male, but the stale quality was overwhelming and confusing. Like a cry from the grave, it reminded me of water that had been excessively purified, removed of everything that made it worthwhile. I tracked down vampires and revenants before, but never anything like this. I looked more closely around the body, and a shape caught my eye. The thin blood pool turned at an unnatural angle, counter to the grade of the floor, leaving a warped crescent moon shape. A bucket. Perhaps a 2-gallon bucket, rounded on the bottom and ample for carrying the nearly 3 liters that would come from a young body. There appeared to be a print on the stairs. Vampires don't need buckets. Weapons could be used to obscure evidence, but a bucket. It was a man. She fought, and some of his skin is under her fingernails. Clearly, he used a blade to cut her throat twice. There's a partial footprint on the edge of the stairs. He used a bucket for her blood. He must have caught her going up or chased her down, but here's where he got her. I stepped onto the stairs. Obviously, he did it quickly, but he spilled enough blood to leave spatter on the walls. Not a clean killer, not obsessive. Got other sneakers in the corner over there. And this 8-year-old girl sank her nails into him as he bled, held her bleeding out over a bucket. How do you know it's one guy? How do you know he used a bucket? Hello? There's dozens of sticky footprints in here, Peppermint sneered. I answered, the footprint's a bare one. No shoes. Who the hell else would walk through here without shoes on? Ignoring him and the spike of joy I felt at his discomfort, I went on. Her trousers are loose. She may have been molested. And that's the end of that.
No, no, see, why did they do this to us? Stop.
Well, I don't know about Exterior and Michelle, but I am now terrified of buckets.
You should be.
I am. Absolutely. First thing in the morning, I'm going to go to my garage and I'm going to get my buckets because I don't trust them now.
I'm really looking forward to getting this back out in the wild.
I have a red bucket that's always looked a bit shifty. So thank you for alerting me. So Eric, you say so it's been published before. When was it first published?
Well, it was first published in 2014, And some things happen with the company as publishing houses. They come, they go.
We've seen them. We've seen them come and go. Yeah.
Yes, they come and they go. And I was all set to publish the sequel. And, well, circumstances dictated, and I pulled the rights to the sequel, and I got the rights back to the first book. And it's just kind of been with me. And I've been able to re-edit it and do some more work on it. And Haverhill House is like I said, it's going to reprint that. And then shortly thereafter, we'll finally get the sequel out. The sequel is going to be All the Dead Men. I'm just really excited to get them back out there. And there'll be three, actually. So it'll finish up as a trilogy.
Awesome.
I mean, can't wait to read the next book.
A great premise and great characters. I mean, you could make a whole series out of it, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you're just going to stop at three? You'll had enough by then.
Well, this three plan. So this whole thing is older. It's so I went to art school, and this character was born of a 3-page comic that I painted for a publication at the school. And it was just a kind of a moody, noirish thing painted in black and white. And the character just kind of stuck with me. And I've got like a dozen ideas for things, but these three books are sort of the most solid of them. So, he's the type of character where I know where he came from, and I know exactly where he's going to end up, and this is somewhere in the middle.
Oh, fantastic. And actually, we've had guests on the show who've done, some have got like a series of like 12 books, and I could never even contemplate a six, but by the time I've got to an end, written the end of it, I'm just sick to death, like Steve has been nagging me to do a sequel to Colton Forshay.
And I want to know what happened.
As much
to
as
him,
I would love to, I've done that. My mind is, I've got to the end of that one and it's moved on, and maybe it's me. I have a very, very, very short attention span. It could be that.
That's true.
I can't
know what it is.
What's that?
You know what it is that holds my interest about these sorts of things is I like to, I enjoy all this genre stuff, and I do enjoy sequels, but what I want to see is the wear and tear on these individuals as they progress. We put them through some horrible things. The next book, they should be affected by these things that happened in the first.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just leap back into it without a care in the world. So there's got to be damage, and I like to show that there has been some damage over time. So by the third book, he's pretty worn out.
that's great. I like that. I don't care. I finished that story arc's done, and I moved on. it's great. I mean, to me, I have some characters that it might be nice to revisit. I think my brain's pretty flighty. It just wants to do something else. I've done that. And it's just me. It's a constant battle to keep it entertained. That's the problem.
Well, you can always turn it over to other writers.
Right.
Say again.
Yeah.
So
you can
what was that?
Turn it over to other authors.
Yeah. No. Not my ideas. No, it's never gonna happen. No.
So,
no,
Eric,
that's the other thing. I'm very precious about my stuff, so no.
I get it.
So, in March, again, Eric, that is, X-Tina with X-T-I. I keep trying.
She's going to have to set up a P.O. box, I think, just to get all these free books sent to. The house just isn't big enough anymore.
Well, there's a four panel cartoon that's been making the rounds lately, and it's two two characters, right, just sort of standing in a white field, and one of them has this object next to them, and that person's like, hey, check it out. I created something. And the other character says, you can't make a living doing art. And then the third panel is blank. And then the fourth panel, the other guy says, can I have it for free?
Yeah, I saw that, yes. We're all writers together. When I was starting off as writer, I used to start off writing screenplays. And, can you just knock us up a screenplay? You know, if we've had an idea for a movie, can you not just quickly knock me up a screenplay, like a 90-page screenplay? we'll pay you when we sell it to Hollywood. I think I got hit with that. The second one, and he's a great, he'd say it would be a great Pixar movie, actually. It was like a kids animated thing. And that must be like six, seven years ago. I'm still waiting for Hollywood to buy it, you know. Get to a point as well. Yeah, I will write a screenplay for you. Love to. And then as soon as you start mentioning money, 99% of them, you never hear from them. They vanish, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's something that I've never done that. Like, I've thought about movies and stuff, but I've never written a screenplay. It's sort of, I don't know. I don't know if I ever would. If somebody asked me, say yes and you get it done.
I've written my own as well. I learned it is, I use the word loose, relatively speaking, easier to write and publish a book, either through a publisher, or you can self-publish it. A screenplay, you write it, and bearing in mind what we said earlier in the show, you write your indie screenplay, brilliant, great idea, unique and everything. You take that to any of the big studios, and they won't even look at you. Then you've got to hawk it around, the independent studios, and if it's anything that's going to take a budget of more than a couple of $1 million, they won't look at it, and then you get the independent studios with, they just want to do their own stuff, and it is just thankless, unless you just happen to hit lucky. Whereas you can get the book, you write the book, you get the book out there, you can get a following with the book, mm-hmm. Then you can send the book to the production companies, I believe, you've got more of a chance that way.
I see what you're saying. Like, if you write a screenplay, it doesn't naturally have a home. But if someone asked me to do it, mm-hmm. and they were willing to pay me to do it, I would do it.
How do you want it? And I have done it. I cottoned on, I've done it. Somebody's got a parrot. I love the parrot sound. For pay, I'm happy to prostitute my art. I don't have a problem with that. If there's money in it, I will write you anything. Literally anything. Literally. Yeah.
Except for poetry.
There's a couple of things that I never thought I would write until I was asked to do it.
Yep.
Except for poetry. James had one poem in him, and that was it. No more
the
poetry.
Poem. The poem.
Yeah, I can't do poetry either.
If somebody said, Jimbo, here's, a ton of money to write some poetry for us, I'd have a damn well good go, I tell you. I would give it a go. And Xtina, it would rhyme as well, unlike much of your poetry, I have to say.
Three of my books were rhyming.
She said, it's free form. Free form, point out, lazy. That's what it is. Lazy.
You can't
be bothered to make it rhyme. It's just words. It's just random words in a column. That's all it is. Lazy.
I actually thought that until I tried it myself. My first three books were rhyming, and that was all I did. And I didn't even get the free verse before that. And then I read a friend of mine, she put out a book and I read it and I fell in love with it. And I'm like, I have to try that. And I did. And I love it. So I may go back to the rhyming eventually, but for right now,
I love the free verse. I can be so much more creative and free, hence the name of the
yes, because that's because you don't have to bother, you know, getting your rhyming dictionary out. You know, you could just throw any word in.
You can,
wow.
Yeah, it's free.
Mm. Which, I mean, we're actually business partners, can you believe? Poetry has to rhyme, which is why you know, my poem about oranges, my poem about oranges never really got off the ground. You know, I got the first line, you know, that was it. So, moving
despite
on. Now I've offended everyone.
No, despite what he says, he's a fan of my poetry, so, you know, he just likes to give me a hard time about that. You know, you could try a little harder and make it rhyme.
Yeah. Yeah. You put a bit of effort in, woman, you know.
Well, you know. It ain't hip-hop,
goodness.
Though.
thank you, yeah. God, I'm glad it's not hip-hop.
Oh, don't get me started on rap.
Oh, boy.
I mean, bearing in mind, you can't have crap without rap. I mean, that's all I'm going to say.
Oh. I agree, though, but...
Well, again, rap, so, all it is that they sample good music that I remember from when I was younger. And they say, oh, this is great, and this is like something from, you know, the 70s. And then they just shout over it. I mean, where's the talent? Where's the artistry,
even,
artistry in that?
I think
well,
that's the same
fortunately,
for like
not
any
all of
music
it that way.
Music. Well, you know, I think it's but any music these days. I don't think they're you know, if you take some of the bands out now and, you know, I'm gonna go see them live. I've heard people like, well, they don't send anything live, you know, like they do on the record live, because everything is so doctored in the studio, you know. I mean, that's, yeah, my opinion. Anyway.
But yeah,
I think
it's funny.
That...
I mean, you go, and we're all sounding old now. I get that. You know, I've been to I've seen the Rolling Stones live. I've seen The Who live. I've seen Blondie live. I've seen, you know, the bands I grew up with live, a lot of them. And they sound exactly like they do in their records. They are just, they're in their 70s now, and they sound fantastic. I mean, I saw the Who about 4 years ago. They did a 2.5 hour set, no break, solid set. Fantastic. Absolutely phenomenal.
They've had a lot of practice.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, they should be good, yeah. Very cynical, Eric.
And they could probably do it in their sleep.
They probably do. And you've got to think, I mean, you know, does Mick Jagger does he get sick of singing this song? I mean, because he's been singing, you know, Satisfaction since the 60s. You've got to think, does he ever think, oh, no, I've got to say again, oh. And it's funny, you know, you go see some of these bands I saw Phil Collins many, many years ago, back when he was good. Here's a story. I actually worked for Toyota at the time, and Phil Collins was like our entertainment. He actually drew we did a sweepstakes or whatever you call it, a lotto thing. He actually drew the winning tickets for that. That's how, you know. And his first part of his concert he did was like his new stuff from his new album, and everybody just sat there quiet. And then he started playing the older hits, and everybody's up and dancing and singing along on that, and because that's what people want. They don't have the new stuff. Now forget that. If the Rollins, why the Rolling Stones haven't produced a new album in 30 years, because nobody's interested. They want the classics.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think maybe it's not about the music anymore, and I with books, with authors, when, you know, you can really tell when they start phoning it in. And that's an ugly thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my
but
God,
I guess when
yeah.
you've got a live audience, it's a lot different.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously not naming names there at all, Eric. Not naming names.
No. No need. Everybody has their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting close to the end of our show here, and before we do run out of time, I want to ask each one of you to plug yourself. Let us know where we can find you and your work online. So, ladies first, of course.
Of course.
So where can you find me online? I feel like I'm all over the place. You can find my books on Amazon, on my author page. I have a weekly blog right now where I'm featuring other horror writers, other speculative fiction writers. And my blog is Girl Meets Monster. And I'm writing a column for Speculative Chick, which is also a great place to find a lot of new speculative fiction. And it's all the writers are women for the most part, I believe. And so, yeah, those are the places you can find me.
Awesome.
Excellent.
I will. Yeah. And Eric?
I have a website that's just my name, ericknunnally.us. And that's got all of my writing, the blog, et cetera, on it. There's actually also an excerpt for All the Dead Men up there, the sequel. And... yeah, that's primarily where everything about me is. So both my design work and my writing work is there. And I'm literally the only Eric Nunley on the internet that spells their name correctly. So I'm not hard to find.
Brilliant.
I will get the link put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, they can go there and do that. And I want to thank you both for coming on the show and saying I will be stalking both of you to come back on and, do some more amazing excerpts because that was great. So
thank
you
so
much.
I should be bugging you for free stuff as well. You mark my words. She will. She's shameless, absolutely shameless.
Well, certainly read for free.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, guys. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've had a jolly time too.
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
Good. And I'm afraid it is. Let's see if we can say it. Well, it is that time where we say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight,
Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Red eyes is back, red from the night before, walked into the room, I walked into a dark. Old Red's in town, sitting late at night, he doesn't make a sound, just adding to the wrinkles on his deathly frown. They're only red from all the tears that I should have shed. Never listen to a word the doctor said. He told you if you drank another, you'd be dead. Old Red Eyes is back. He showed his ache all over.